right, everybody? It's so great to see you all. My name's Megan. If I haven't introduced myself, I'm the Family Generations pastor. And I just have to share a little story with you. It was just a couple nights ago, my sister Brooke, one of my sisters, invited me and my husband over for dinner. And because she's a way better cook than I am, I said yes. And my parents came as well, so it was so great. And as you often do around a table, around food, especially with family members, we just start talking about old times. And my parents start to reminisce. My mom talks about her high school and where she went to St. John's University in New York and where my dad grew up and showed us the small little house he and his siblings lived in. And then my dad starts talking about his first car. And his first car was a 1957 black and white Ford Fairlane. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, uh-huh. And he just starts to describe this thing. It's like, oh, yeah, it's black and white. That's it. And we show it to him on our phones. And he got so excited. He said, talks about the chrome and the eight cylinders, or I think that's what's it called under the engine. I don't know. But he starts talking about it, and he's so proud of it. And he says this at the very end. He goes, it was a classic, a total classic. Just like that. Right, Dad? That's it. Right, Dad? Total classic. And it's very interesting, as he's got this twinkle in his eyes talking about this classic car, I was thinking about our summer series, Summer School for Grown-Ups, because we're going to cover some classics that at least all of us have heard about, unless we also maybe studied them. If you were actually in Sunday school, maybe you saw it on flannel graphs, some of you, I don't know, but regardless of how you have observed or maybe heard about some of these stories, they're definitely classics. So we're going to spend all summer long talking about them. And so this classic story that I want to share with you today is known as the greatest underdog story of all time. But is it? That's for you to decide. So I'm just going to show you this quick 2-minute brief video that will kind of recap what we learned in Sunday school. Take a look at this.
Long ago, in the land of Israel, there was a young boy named David. He was the youngest of 8 brothers and lived in the town of Bethlehem. David wasn't just any boy. He had a special job, looking after his father's sheep. He spent his days and nights in the fields, making sure no harm came to them. It wasn't an easy job, especially when danger lurked. Lions and bears often tried to snatch the sheep, but David was brave. With only his staff and sling, he fought them off, protecting his flock. When he wasn't with his sheep, David loved playing his harp. He played so beautifully that even the birds stopped to listen. One day, a wise man named Samuel visited David's house. God had told Samuel that David would be the future king of Israel. So Samuel anointed David, which means he chose David for a very important role. Meanwhile, in a valley not too far away, a huge problem was growing. The Israelites and their enemies, the Philistines, were preparing for battle. The Philistines had a giant warrior named Goliath. He was taller than any man and stronger than any bear. Every day, Goliath challenged the Israelites to send a warrior to fight him, but everyone was too afraid. One day, David went to bring food to his brothers who were with the Israelite army. When he saw Goliath, he couldn't believe that everyone was afraid of him. David said, "I'll fight Goliath. God has protected me from lions and bears while I guarded my sheep. He will protect me now." The king gave David armor, but it was too heavy. So David decided to use just his sling and some stones. As Goliath moved in to attack, David took a stone, put it in his sling, and swung it with all his might. The stone flew through the air and hit Goliath right in the forehead. Goliath fell to the ground, and David had won. David's bravery showed that no matter how small you are, you can overcome big challenges with faith and courage. And that young boy, David, would go on to be one of the
greatest kings is how it ends. The greatest kings of all times, a little bit cut off. So kind of like you remember it, right, everyone? Okay. It is Mark Twain who said this. He said that the greatest important days of your life are the 2 days. One was when you were born, and the day that you find out why. I don't care if you're 8 or 108 or somewhere in between, you have a why. You were created with a why. And today's story will reveal part of your why, and certainly David's why. And so kind of to summarize a little bit, actually to reveal the introduction of what happened with David, I've asked one of our high school students, Zane Stubblefield, to come on up, he's so awesome, and read a portion of the David story. So Zane, why don't you come on up? Hi. Yeah, give it up. Zane is just the best.
God told the prophet Samuel, it's time to move on from Saul. I've chosen a new king. Go to Jesse's house in Bethlehem. Samuel went a little nervous, but followed God's instructions. Jesse showed off his 7 older sons one by one. Each time, Samuel thought, this guy looks like king material. But the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Finally, Samuel asked, is this all your sons? Jesse said, or there's the youngest, he's out washing sheep. When young David showed up, God said, that's him. So Samuel anointed David at that moment, and from that moment on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. So David, the shepherd nobody noticed, was noticed by God and started walking into his calling and live in his purpose.
Come on. By the way, have you seen this kid play drums? Okay, mom and dad, where are you? This Stubblefield, where are you? Yeah, right? Have you heard him play drums? Yeah, no, because, right, you guys have, haven't you? The students have. But some of you would say no because you haven't volunteered in youth ministry yet. Okay, let me just plant that seed. All right, so forward to chapter 17. It says this, it says, now David was the son of a man named Jesse from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. Jesse was an old man at the time, and he had 8 sons. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had already joined Saul's army to fight the Philistine. David was the youngest son. So here's David. He's somewhere between the ages of 15 and 19. How do we know that? Because at this time, in order to go to war, you had to be 20 years old or older. So David is the youngest son. And I don't know, how many of you have siblings? Anyone in the room? Yeah. How many of you are a sibling? Same question. Okay, does this ring true for you? The oldest child, I make the rules. Middle child, I'm the reason we have rules. Youngest, the rules don't apply to me. Anyone? Right. Well, we don't know how this might have fit for David, if that's a reality or not. But what we do know about David is that he was young. He was the youngest, as a matter of fact. And in 1 Samuel 16 and 17, we read the word young. And what that word literally means in the Hebrew is this. It's hakwatan. And by the way, it's Pastor Manny's favorite Hebrew word, just so you know. And here's what it means. It means the small, the insignificant, the runt, the young, the unimportant one, the least, and the weakest. And that's our David. So I ask you, was he an underdog? You decide. Because while David's brothers were out, I don't know, being trained for a certain type of battle, David's training wasn't actually on the battlefield, but it was in a different type of field, as a shepherd. And he would use a sling, fighting off lions and tigers and... Oh, thank you. Okay, I just want to see if you're paying attention. But what you need to know, that in ancient warfare during this time, there were 3 types of warriors. There was cavalry, there was infantry, and there was artillery. Cavalry is the men on the horsebacks. Infantry is the foot soldiers. And then artillery, was archery and slingers. And so I ordered one on, you know, Amazon. I love Amazon. And it doesn't look like the slingshot you probably had as a child, right, everybody? Looks a little different. So what would happen with the slingshots is they would take their leather pouch, may have been a little bit bigger than this, but maybe not. And they would put either an iron ball in it or, you guessed it, a stone. And they would take it and they would begin winding up again and again and again. And then fling one side out. Aren't you glad I didn't put a rock in it? I just didn't want to kill one of you today. And with the wind up would come such power at the speed of some of the best fast pitch pitchers in baseball. A car that could go 70, 80 miles an hour fast. That's the speed at which David could sling this rock. So it's with practiced hands and with faithful trust David steps into this battlefield. And I have four main points for us, four observations, I would even say four truths. Here's the first one for you and me this morning. God has a purpose. God has a purpose. And if you think this is just a simple point in a sermon, well, then you might want to ask Pastor Rick Warren, who wrote a book called Purpose-Driven Life that has sold 34 million copies. 34 million copies. Why? Because people want to know their why. Everybody has asked the question, what's my purpose? What on earth, subtitle, what on earth am I here for? And what was true for David is a timeless truth for us. God has a purpose. And here's your first reality check. I have a couple of these this morning. The purpose of your life is far greater than your own personal fulfillment. You were born by his purpose and for his purpose. I heard that. Thank you. Love that. But David's purpose and your purpose and my purpose doesn't always mean position, at least not right away, because before David was crowned, he was anointed. And that moment of him becoming king wouldn't happen until 15 years after he was anointed. So what went on during those 15 years? Let's go back to the scene in verse 26. It says that David asked the soldiers standing by, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending the defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he asked? He's allowed to defy the armies of the living God." Do you like my David voice? Okay, anyway. That question was reported to Saul because he asked it a couple times. And then Saul summoned David, meaning he sent for him. So David is now before Saul, and it says in the passage, David says to King Saul, "Don't worry about this Philistine. I'll go fight him." And then Saul, dressed in David, put Saul's armor on him. Saul's armor on David. And he's like, "Dude, this just doesn't fit. This is not going to work for me." So he took him off. My second point is this. God works through you being you. I want you to picture this. Here's a teenager in front of the king, the highest supreme being on earth at that time, and he's saying to this teenager, "I want you to wear my armor. Put it on." I mean, what would you say? Of course you're going to say yes. Yes, sir, of course. Yes, of course, your king, that thou wast, I'll put on the armor. You know, of course, you're going to submit in authority and do whatever the king wants you to do. But David didn't do just that. He put on the armor, but then he said, "King, this isn't me. It's you, but it's not me." I think sometimes some of us put on something that's not ours to put on. We put on a personality trait that was never ours to begin with. We wear something that's just not ours. It doesn't really fit in our own skin and our own personality and the way that God has wired us. And in trying to be like someone else, we lose ourselves. And in this moment, David's like, "It's just not me." And I wonder, what in this moment gave David such confidence that he could stand before the king and tell him these things? And I would suggest two things. Here they are. The first is this. Practice, well, the practice with the sling. And then, of course, perspective. His God. He had this perspective that changed everything. And that gave him confidence and gave him bravery to enter into places that he didn't know. Remember this, you guys. Day after day, night after night, week after week, year after year. And it was years. David was in the field, on the field, shepherding. And it was there that he would write, alone, with the sheep. And he would sing, and he'd play instruments, and he would write this. from Psalm chapter 8. When I consider the heavens, the moon and the stars, as I'm sitting under this Bethlehem sky, what is man that you are mindful of him? So David had this galactic view of God, this galactic perspective of who God was, because he soaked him in so often, day after day, night after night, week after week. He knew his God. He spent time with God, and he wrote about it, and he talked about it, and he sung about it. And so when it came to the moment in the battle, and he's on the valley, and he comes towards Goliath, and Goliath is yelling at him, and he comes towards him, he looks at him, teenager, and he goes, "Yep, you're pretty big, but I got something bigger. I know someone bigger. And today, Goliath, I'm gonna take off your head." And there's yelling and screaming and shouting on both sides of the mountain. The Philistines on this side, and David on this side, the Israelites on this side, and then the valley in between them, and they're both yelling and screaming and taunting. It wasn't arrogance, by the way. It wasn't arrogance that gave David this tremendous confidence. What was it then? What gave him this bravery? What gave him this ability to enter into something that nobody else would dare to enter into? Well, I said it before. He knew who God was and who God prepared him to be in that moment. He was ready. Here's a reality check. Again, I'm going to say it again. The purpose of your life is far greater than your own personal fulfillment. You were born by his purpose and for his purpose. Here's your third truth. And I'm going to spend the most amount of time on this one. God prepares you for the battles. God prepares you for the battles. This wasn't the first battle of all time. Not in a long stretch, but it was David's first public battle. But not his first fight. Let me say that again. This was David's first public battle, but it was not his first fight. In fact, I kind of like to think about it like this. It was, like BG and AG. BG, before Goliath, and after Goliath. And before Goliath, there was, tiger, lions, battles with sheep and lions and goats. I mean, you name it, he went after them. Big animals that he slayed to protect his sheep. That was a battle. But after Goliath, oh boy, there were battles. He had a lot of them, dozens of them. But they weren't just physical battles. They were battles involving betrayals and heartbreaks and sin and a lack of confidence and even some time away from God. I mean, he went through stuff. But God was preparing him all the while. And let's go back to the scene with the Israelites and the Philistines, and they're in battle. In verse 16, it says, "For 40 days, every morning and every evening, Goliath came, shouting, taunting them. And as soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright." Friends, this is not a 3,000-year-old story. This, for some of you, is a 30-minute-old story. Maybe for some of you, a 3-minute-old story. Some of you right now, today, are in a battle. Some of you are facing giants so big, and man, they are just about to take you out and take you down. And God knows it. And although you and I, we're in Christ, in faith, in the church. For many of us, that's true. We still have battles. We still have stuff. And I don't know what your battle is this morning. I don't know if it's one that just keeps reoccurring, like many of them do. Oh, the enemy loves that. Let's make this a reoccurring battle. Discouragement, anxiety, temptation, comparison, regret, insecurity, promiscuity, pornography, overeating, undereating, I don't know. I don't know what your battle is today or what it was. But one thing I know for sure is that when you're in the middle of the battle, it's rough. And here's your third reality check. That life isn't one Goliath moment. It's a series of battles. And what you and I do to prepare ourselves for those battles, it'll make us or break us. And I'm 100% certain, I mean 100% certain, that was when David was anointed as a teenager to be, you know, crowned king and had this moment, it was like this straight line, you know, right? Straight line to the crown. He's like, ah, batenya babadi, da-da-da, you know what I mean? This is his moment, and he is excited about it. And he thought, all right, in front of his brothers, maybe there was some pride. I don't know, it doesn't say. But man, can you imagine what that felt like? And then he began to live life a little bit. Maybe he's 20, 23, 24, and it began to look a little bit like this. But then the reality as he lived life even more is it looked like this. One thing is certain. One thing is for sure. When you are in the middle of the squiggly line, when you are in the middle of that battle, it is so easy to lose heart, but don't you dare. Don't you dare lose heart. Don't you dare stay in bed. Don't you dare pull up the covers. Don't you dare start taking those pills, drinking that bottle. Don't you dare isolate, because then he's got you. You know what I'm saying? We've all done it. We all tend to isolate, close the door to our room, our house. And man, That ain't the way to fight our battles. My mother's gonna kill me for the grammar I just used. There's a better way to fight. There's a better way to face it. And I would tell you this morning that God is not asking you to buck up. He's not looking at you like some parents. This drives me crazy. Some parents, when their kid falls, and they're either like, oh, you're okay. You're buck up. You got it. Come on. Pull yourself up by the, what are they called again? Bootstraps. Yeah, bootstrap. That's it. Just pull yourself up by the bootstraps. No. How do you know how they feel? You didn't fall. God is not asking you to buck up. He's asking you to look up, to wake up, to grow up, to show up and say, I've got you in your battle, and you can count on me because I am going to slay your giant. Some of you still have giants, but let me just tell you something. That giant doesn't have to have power anymore. It may still be right there in your face or in your living room, but it doesn't have to have power over you. Not another day, not another second, not another minute. It can be losing its power right now. You want that? Louis Giglio said it really well when he said this: your eyes are locked on the size of your problem when your mouth needs to be filled with praise. Oh, can I get an amen to any Presbyterian in this room right now? Here's your fourth truth. It's that God redeems and recycles every part of your story. Every part of it. You know what I think about when I was 19? Some of you know this. Actually, when I was 13, I went away to camp. My parents sent me to Forest Home Christian Camp. This is why you got to send your kids and your grandkids and your friends. Pay for somebody to go to camp. I'm telling you guys, it makes a difference, because it was right there, right then, that this 13-year-old girl, I'm 55 now, but this 13-year-old girl would accept Jesus and hear about the gospel for the very first time in her life, and her life would be changed. And in that moment, I got a call from God. I didn't know what it was yet, but I knew it was coming. I had a purpose. The why was on its way. But a few months later, fast forward, I'm in my youth group, my new youth group, and I met somebody there who was not part of it, and I was, let's just say, taken significantly advantage of. And for 5 years, I didn't tell anybody what had happened. And every day during those 5 years, it was battle after battle after battle. And you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it, really. I mean, certainly I did, but you would never know it, because I looked put together, I performed pretty well, and I knew how to please people. Oh boy, was I good at that one. Whew! But I was in a battle. That's just how I dealt with my battle. Does this make sense? And God's like, no, 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 no. That's not your why. That's not your purpose. I'm gonna provide an escape, a way out, which he promises every time. You got to look for it. You got to be willing. And little did I know that God would use that story to help a lot of people heal along my journey. He still does. I wrote a book, curriculum. It's not ego talking here, guys. It's God saying, I'm going to redeem your story. Even the parts of it that you think are way back there. Or the parts that were just yesterday where you blew it. God goes, I saw that, and I love you. Are you ready to allow me to use your story? Well, just in case you and I begin to believe that David was flawless and perfect, he so wasn't. In fact, do any of you ever feel a little crazy? Yeah, me neither. But David was amazing, and let me just show you an example of what David did. Look on the screen here. David's here, he's like, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. My God, why have you forsaken me? I will bless the Lord at all times. How long, Lord? Will you forget me forever? In your presence there is fullness of joy. My tears have been my food day and night. I wonder what that tasted like. He lifted me out of the slimy pit. My heart is in anguish and I'm overwhelmed. Can anybody relate? Life is like a squiggly line, and David's life was no exception. It was this roller coaster of ups and downs, highs and lows, faith and doubt, and yet God called David. This makes me cry. A man after his own heart. What does he call you? What does he call me? Man, I want to be a person after God's own heart. I want God to look at me and say, that's it, Megan, you're starting to get it. And sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. And when I know, because we all know, when I know I'm going a little sideways, or I have a really bad thought about somebody, or I want to say something negative that's just not right or godly, I ask God to let me feel that. Prick my heart. Because I want to be a woman after God's own heart. Not perfect. David wasn't. I love how John Eldridge says this. He says, I want you to take a deep breath before I read this. Would you take a deep breath before I read this? And I want you to soak this in. This is for you. Jesus says that as our good shepherd, he's leading us. What an encouraging thought. Jesus is leading you and he's leading me. He's shepherding us. I can feel something in my heart loosen even now as I consider this. okay, I don't have to make life happen on my own. Now, if Christ takes it upon himself to lead, then our part is to follow. And you'll find that it helps a great deal in your following if you know what God is up to. True. We may not know exactly what God is up to in this or event or in that in our lives. Like, why didn't I get the job? Or how come she won't return my calls? Or why haven't my prayers healed this cancer? I don't know. Sometimes we get clarity and sometimes we can't. But whatever else is going on, we can know this. God is always up to our transformation for his purpose. Will you show the 4 points on the slide, please? God has a purpose for you. God wants to work through you. Yes, you, your personality, you being who you are. God prepares you for the battles. And God redeems every part of your story. I'm curious. What did you need to hear this morning? Which one of those points stirred inside of you? I have no doubt in my mind that every single person here, including myself, needed to be reminded that he's got a purpose, he works through you, he needs you to be you, not somebody else. He's going to fight your battles, and he wants to redeem and reclaim your story. And you know what? Let me see you for a minute. God's not asking you to figure it all out. He's not asking you to figure a whole lot out. He's just asking you to follow. And one day, your faithfulness will meet its moment.